Hello, everybody. We're back with another wonderful episode of There Is No Offseason, Baseball Prospectus' only daily Dynasty podcast, proud member of the BP Podcast Network. We've got a lot of Dynasty League and related content for you today. I'm Mark Berry. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus. And with me, as always, for 2022, Jesse Roche. Jesse, how you doing with actual baseball for us to speculate wildly about?
I am all here for overreaction season. It's all over. I mean, if you're on Twitter, that's like half of Twitter is hype machines. They're just hyping without any kind of consequence, because it's way too early to hype too hard, even though I'm sure that I, in particular, will be doing a slight victory lap on a player that we'll be talking about today. But it's fun. The baseball's back. So pumped. Got to go out to some minor league games in Charleston, and it's just great to be back in a ballpark, feel a little bit more comfortable there, you know, with a bit further removed from the more serious aspects of COVID. It's not gone, but it feels so much closer to normalcy now, and it's just great.
And a quick plug for Jesse's most recent piece. We're recording this on Friday afternoon. He went up on the site today where he's digging into some StatCast numbers. So I think we might try and hit on a couple of those names that you mentioned. If not, we're definitely going to do a really, really heavy minor league player centric episode next week. If you wanted to hear about some of those names sooner, check them out on the site. It's a good article. We got a lot of good stuff going up on there. So we'll get to it all eventually, I imagine. But there is a lot to talk about on the major league level, actually. And there's only one place. If you've been listening to this podcast since, let's say, Outfielder Week, maybe even before that with first-year player draft week, you know that there's only one place for us to really start. And I assume this is the victory lap that you wanted to go on, so I'm not even going to mention this player by name. I'm going to clear out. Like, take it away.
Seiya Suzuki. I am thrilled with how well he's been doing so far this year. Us at Baseball Prospectus, you know, Pakoda was incredibly bullish on Suzuki. I've been very much in his corner from day one. He was in December. He was the 17th ranked prospect in our top 500. And he's up to 11th before the season started. And of course, that's going up even higher based on his early returns. But, you know, from the get-go, I was saying that, and Brett and I were saying, pounding the table for him, for Suzuki, as the number one pick in first-year player drafts, regardless of your contention cycle, because guess what? If you were a rebuilder and took, say, a Suzuki number one, you could trade him for a top, like, 5 prospect or 10 prospect in many leagues, and you can't do that with Marcelo Meyer. You can't do that with even Jordan Lawler, who's having a great start to the year. So I'm just saying, small victory lap so far with Seiya Suzuki, but going to his actual performance, you know, he's flashing the exceptional plate approach and discipline that he showed in Nippon Professional Baseball. His swing rate is only 29.8%. He's borderline passive, and there's a reason why he has 28% strikeouts. It's because he just gets in such deep counts all the time, and he doesn't chase at all, which is another like just remarkable thing about him. 10.7% chase rate, so
6% swinging strike rate too, so it's not like he's flailing up there.
No, he makes contact, and the contact he is making has been very good. It's not like epic power by any means, but it's definitely comfortably plus, and he's getting to a lot of it in games. He's putting the ball in the air. And, you know, he's making enough contact to make it work. And, you know, he actually has 94th percentile sprint speed. You know, granted, 0 stolen base attempts. And he has had a history of stolen bases in Japan, even though it wasn't at a very successful rate. And, you know, his body and his acceleration, I think he's just not going to be a type that's going to steal a lot of bases. But because of that sprint speed, it gives you maybe a glimmer of hope that he could at least contribute on the bases a little bit. But regardless, he's flashing plus hitting ability and plus power. He could be like a 280, 290 hitter with 30 plus home runs, like right now, which is wild to think that, you know, you could have gotten him with the first overall pick in a first year player draft. And, you know, he's a player that I would try, and honestly, it may be too soon to target him right now and maybe wait until he hits a swoon, because his price right now in dynasty leagues, I'm sure, is like through the roof.
Yeah, it's a little like what the Cubs did with him, right? Like you mentioned, you take him number one regardless of your contention window, and the Cubs are, for all intents and purposes, rebuilding, but they have been doing so by kind of adding where they see value, which is what they did the first time around when all of their bats were coming up. They signed John Lester, what a lot of people thought was a year too early for their contention, and then you get some things that click, and then you're rolling. And that's kind of what you would be looking at with, say, a Suzuki in a dynasty setting. You take him, and if your team still craters, then all right, maybe you think about moving him. But otherwise, he's 27. You imagine that he's going to be productive at the very least for the next 3-4 seasons. And if your contention window is taking longer than that, then maybe that might be a little bit too slow of a timetable to begin with, and you maybe need to start kicking it into gear.
Agreed. And yeah, he's just a fascinating player. He's going to be a lot of fun. He's a great personality too. Great personality off the field. He's kind of a goofy guy, and he's just going to be such a fun player to watch and cheer for. And he's the type of player that you want to have on your dynasty team. Obviously for his production, but you know, he's a guy that you want to root for. So very much in on Seiya Suzuki. He's been just a pleasure to watch this early season.
Yeah, so before we move on to a couple other names, I have the March top 500 dynasty rankings pulled up, and I'm curious as to how much higher he's going to get pushed up after this start. The next outfielder on the list is also off to a good start of the season compared to where he's been previously. Would you take Seiya Suzuki or Cody Bellinger moving forward?
You know, I probably still edge Bellinger, and Bellinger is off to a strong start. You know, Seiya Suzuki is certainly moving up. He was in the top 100 overall in the most recent update. You know, he's definitely going to be in the top 80. I think he's pushing top 50. I think it's very premature to really put him that high and pump him that high. But, you know, I traded him one for one straight up for Randy Arozarena in TDGX. And I have a little bit of regret for that trade. At the time, it was before the season, I thought that was a fantastic trade for an established 5x5 player. He's 27 years old, but man, it's not looking great in retrospect. And that really shows you where I think Suzuki's value is headed. And, you know, Rosarena was ranked, I think, 50 in the 50s. So I think that, you know, Suzuki could be a guy who very quickly could be a top 50 dynasty asset. That's how good of a hitter he is.
Yeah, Rosarena was 59 in the March update. Bellinger was 90 and Suzuki 96. I expect those last two guys to maybe move up a little bit, just because it seems like they're, you know, Bellinger is back-ish. Still striking out a little too much, but after the last two seasons, anything resembling, you know, a hitter with a pulse is good to see out of him.
And I do prefer Suzuki to Bellinger. I will say that. I waffled at it initially, but I do prefer Suzuki, and he'll be moving ahead of Bellinger. But yes, Bellinger is definitely showing some positive signs so far. But yes, he hasn't really hit for quite the power that he had shown in the past, and the whiff rate is still elevated. I want to see a little bit more before I really do any kind of aggressive movement for him, but he is moving up.
All right. So speaking of moving up, I think I emotionally hedged when we did our preseason predictions for BP, and I had a certain AL Central team in fifth place, and it was sort of a spite last place ranking. But the Cleveland Guardians are hitting now at a level that I don't know if I've seen recently. I don't know if I've seen them come close to it recently. They have three guys in the top 10 for DRC Plus. Of course, Jose Ramirez is there. But then we also have Stephen Kwan. We have Owen Miller. Miles Straw is lurking in the wings of that list. I have no idea how this is really happening. But what do you make of this hot start from the Guardians?
It's a lot of fun, and it's fun because, you know, the Guardians are actually leading baseball with 68 runs scored, and this is with Framil Reyes not hitting at all so far this year, with Ahmed Rosario not hitting, and it's really because, you know, Jose Ramirez has been otherworldly so far, and, you know, of course, Stephen Kwan has, you know, set the baseball world on fire, and you're going to have a lot of people wildly overreacting to Stephen Kwan's performance so far. Stephen Kwan is at best what we hope Nick Madrigal would become, which is, again, you know, that's a very good player, but Stephen Kwan has very nominal power. And he's shown in so far this season, you know, his max exit velocity this year at 103 miles an hour is the hardest hit ball he had, is harder than any ball he hit last year. According to Fangraphs, you know, that shows you how much power he has, which is very, very little. I mean, he managed to hit some home runs last year, but they were squeakers. I just am not confident that he's going to be a double-digit home run force, despite all the projection systems thinking that's going to happen. His average exit velocity so far is just 83.3 miles an hour. He's just like a high-contact slap hitter. You know, it may just be an empty average. I've initially loosely comped him to Luis Arraez with a touch more speed. And, you know, he kind of looks a lot like David Fletcher in a lot of ways. You know, high contact hitter with a touch of speed that could give you double-digit stolen bases. He hasn't stolen a base yet. He's had one attempt. He's not a burner either. So it's just the tools, other than his contact ability and hit tool, all are not as high, not the types of tools that are going to create a elite fantasy player. That said, you know, he was the 87th prospect in the last update. I could see him pushing into the top 50 before he graduates, which would make him a top 200 overall dynasty player. And I think that's possible. You know, we'll have to continue to see how the power progresses, but I mean, his contact rate is legit elite. It's the top, the top contact rate in all of baseball. It's 94.5%, which is wild. I mean, it's just crazy contact. It's not just, it's not just contact. He's contact and he's disciplined too. So he doesn't, he's not like a free swinger like a lot of high contact hitters are. He doesn't swing a ton and he doesn't chase a ton as a result. I mean, I think they're related, but, you know, he's a player who can potentially give you average and on-base ability, which makes him a little bit unique and definitely a much, a very good real life player. Fantasy, I mean, he's solid. I just don't get carried away.
Yeah, and I think that he's significantly more valuable in a points format than he would be in Roto, because you're not going to get any power out of him. His run production numbers will be very dependent on the lineup, which have been good so far, but I don't know if I have full faith and confidence for this team to be this high scoring for the entire season. So then you're just looking at average. And like you mentioned, OBP, his OBP is 511 right now, which is just absurd. But if you're caught up in the Quantissance in a Roto league, I think now might be the time to gauge some offers around the league. But in a points league, I think that he could still be very valuable even without the power or the steals, really, just because he's going to hit and he's going to get on base. And his slugging percentage is such where he's, you know, getting some extra base hits as well. So I think that he's significantly more valuable in a points league than he would be in a Roto.
Agreed. Yeah, I think he's going to get some extra base hits. I mean, he makes so much contact, and he does make enough quality contact, and he has enough speed to, I think, edge out some doubles. I mean, he's had a couple triples, I believe, as well. The other player on the Guardians that's super fascinating so far this year has been Owen Miller, who's right mm-hmm. now on the COVID IL. But, you know, he's off to a red hot start. He's hitting 500 so far with two home runs and 964 slugging percentage. I mean, Owen Miller is a former well-regarded prospect. He's not a well-regarded power hitter. I do not anticipate this power burst to continue, but he's not punchless. I mean, he's definitely, he has more pop than Stephen Kwan, for example. I think Owen Miller conceivably could be a guy who turns into like a 280, 15 home run hitter. And there's even a little bit of speed that he could contribute someone that's stolen, with some stolen bases. So I think he could become a quite valuable, you know, dynasty asset, you know, with eligibility at first base, second base. You know, there's it's conceivable he could gain eligibility elsewhere too, because he has experience playing all over the field. And I think he's, once he returns, I think he'll be a regular in that lineup, especially as long as he continues to, you know, hit, of course. And I mean, again, high contact hitter, not a boatload of power, not a boatload of speed, but enough of both to have an impact in most formats.
Yeah, he was the guy that a lot of Guardians fans last year were clamoring for to break camp with the team, just because of how, let's say, not good the Major League offense was. And then he suffered from that thing that a lot of prospects suffered from, is you don't hit right away and then you don't have a regular role right away, and he just kind of fell into a funk, and 2021 was a lost year for him with the big club. This obviously I don't think he's going to slug 964. I think that would be a very lofty expectation to set on him. We'll pump that brake, but he is a multi-positional, flexible guy that will, at worst, be a very good middle infield or corner infield option, and you might even be able to slide him into those positions at first or second, and he can hold his own there. I don't think that he's going to be one of the 12 best guys at either one of those positions, maybe second base, but that's still a really good player, and he's just 25 years old, and if he can maintain the multi-position eligibility, then you're looking at someone with different skill sets but a similar value to a Jake Cronenworth or a Max Muncy or something along those lines. I think I would take both of those guys over Owen Miller, but that's the maybe high end of what you could expect from somebody like Miller over a full season.
I think Jake Cronenworth is actually a very interesting note. I think he has a lot of qualities that Cronenworth has. It's just maybe a touch less of everything.
Right. Yeah, like that's
a touchless hit, a touchless pop, a touchless speed. So, but I think he could be like a Jake Cronenworth light, and you know. Yay, that's exciting. I think that's exciting, especially for deeper formats. I think Owen Miller is a guy that is moving up. He's, a top 400 dynasty asset at this point. We'll have to see how the Guardians continue to use him once he returns from the COVID list, but I have to imagine that he's going to insert back into the six hole and continue to just rake, hopefully rake.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he'll have much competition from the likes of, you know, Bobby Bradley has not been doing a whole lot. Is Ernie Clement going to take reps from him? I don't think so. So,
hey,
yeah,
Josh Naylor.
Josh Naylor.
He's doing some stuff.
Josh Naylor is great. Is great for vibes, and if he's your like sixth or seventh best hitter, then you are okay. But yeah, I think that was the problem with last year's team is that he was like the third best hitter, and that's rough. You don't want to end up in that spot. And one of the reasons that he got up to that high last year was because the Guardians traded away Francisco Lindor and also Carlos Carrasco, who we'll talk about too. So we have a trio of Mets that we wanted to hit on. The Mets have gotten off to a nice little start there, I'd say, with their 10-4 record as of recording this. And Francisco Lindor is awesome. He's hitting home runs, he's hitting, and he's pr- pretty much the player that they had to be imagining that they were getting when they made the trade around this time last year. We talk about it all the time. Like, it's really hard to navigate human things in this sort of context when we're just looking at numbers, we're just looking at performance. It can't be easy to switch situations from Cleveland to New York, where you've been in this kind of smaller area your whole life, and then you go to New York, you get off to a slow start, you get in an argument about rodents in the clubhouse early in the season, and it just is everything that can go wrong goes wrong for Lindor in 2021, and it's hard to factor in some of those things. So I almost just chalk those situations up as a wash. Like, if you're a Cuban, Japanese, if you're an international player that comes over and struggles in the first season, I almost just throw it away and look for that second season. It looks like Lindor has bounced back. He's awesome again. Any concerns about this, or how high do you think he can move up in the next iteration of the dynasty rankings?
I have some concerns just because he's still not the player he was. You know, he's sure. Not the player he was in 2017 and 2018. He's lost a step, but I think it's very promising that he's already attempted 5 stolen bases. You know, 3 of which have he actually succeeded on, but you know, that's a huge plus for him because the Mets have not been an aggressive base running team over the last couple of years, and you know, he only had 12 stolen bases last year, or 10 stolen bases last year. I think that there was a concern that steals may not be a huge part of his game like they were in 2018, 2019, where he had 20 plus stolen bases. So having 3 already, I think it gives hope that he could return closer to 20 stolen bases again. And, you know, 4 home runs, despite, you know, not a ton of, like, huge contact, is a great sign, too. You know, he's not whiffing a ton. He's not striking out much. You know, 11.3% strikeout rate. A lot of his plate discipline early returns are very comparable to what they were in his peak years. So I think a lot of what we're seeing so far with Lindor is incredibly promising, and it's good. It's good, but I mean, you just don't get carried away thinking that he's a potential like top 10 player in Dynasty, because sure. He's not. I think that his upside, I think he has upside to move up. He's not moving up a boatload yet. I think that there's a chance that he jumps into the top 30. I think that is roughly where the 21 to 30 range, I think, is roughly maybe where his ceiling is. And I think that he could get there quickly. But I don't think, you know, given, you know, he's 28 years old, more diminished speed. He's, you know, I just don't think that he has the type of fantasy upside to jump into that top 20. But again, if you've drafted Francisco Lindor around like 48 or something in redraft, or even in Dynasty, if he fell to that point, you've got to be feeling great.
Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned, with the speed, I know the StatCast sprint speed isn't a be-all end-all, but he's posted his best number since 2018. So seems as though he's healthy and he's willing to run now, which is pretty much all you're asking for as a dynasty manager. Let's talk about some of the pitchers though, because the Mets have obviously suffered their fair share of injuries on the pitching side, with Scherzer going down for a little bit. He's back now. Obviously Jacob deGrom. They're getting Taijuan Walker back here shortly. But Carlos Carrasco has been awesome. And Tyler McGill sort of held down the rotation for the first couple turns when everyone else was hurt. Having those guys as your 4th or 5th or 6th starter is kind of incredible. And I think... Let's talk about McGill first, because he's a little more interesting in a dynasty context. What are the things that have stood out to you about his start to the season? And do you think that they are sustainable as a dynasty starter for the next handful of years?
Yeah, well, Miguel has increased his velocity, basically. You know, it's up on 1.3 miles an hour. His fastball has
That's
better
nice.
Shape. It's up to 95.9 miles an hour. Better shape in general. It's missing more bats, and it's, you know, limiting contact. And it is really his primary pitch by far. And I think that his changeup, you know, was a pitch that emerged last year, and it's remaining a solid offering. Again, you know, I wouldn't get over confident with Miguel because his changeup really is just an average to maybe a smidge above average pitch, and his slider is also, you know, is very much like an slightly above average offering as well. So, you know, his secondaries are not like true standout bat missing pitches really. And I mean, his fastball is probably the main driver of his success. I think it's very clearly a plus pitch. And, you know, even if it's a plus pitch with two average offerings, that's a very good starting pitcher. And I think that obviously given his start to the season, he's going to stick in the rotation. And this is not the, you know, healthiest of rotations for sure. I think that even if and when DeGrom returns, they're going to find a way to get Miguel starts. And I think that maybe probably someone else will get injured by that point. it's a great
Hopefully
problem to have.
Him.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have for the Mets, you know, because you want to have as many pitchers as possible. And I think, you know, Miguel's very much a legit starting pitcher in the major leagues. You know, the other big thing about his fastball is he gets a ton of extension. He has 7.2 feet of extension on his fastball, which is among the best in the major leagues. So even at 95.9 miles an hour, it plays up even further. I mean, I think there's a legitimate case that maybe his fastball has turned into a plus-plus offering. And if that's true, you know, he's a very different pitcher. And then all of a sudden, he gets to jump way up in dynasty rankings. I think there is a legitimate top 200 overall upside for him. And I think he could be a guy who pushes, you know, if he can continue to hold this type of velocity throughout the season, he could push toward the top 100. I think that he has that potential. We'll see. I mean, it's also a great sign that his strike rate has been so high. He's only walked 3.2% of batters so far. Only three starts, of course, so the sample is teeny tiny. But, like, a lot of positives for Miguel. He's a huge riser so far.
Yeah, his teammate that we were talking about, or that I mentioned previously, I don't know if we need to get too deep into Carlos Carrasco. He's 35. I am just psyched to see him doing well. Like, it's almost always been about health with him, and he seems to be healthy right now and is just, like, dominating. The 98% strand rate and the 167 batting average on balls in play, I think might trend back to the norm at some
Maybe.
Point here.
Maybe.
But I'm just happy to see him, like, doing well and to be throwing hard and striking guys out and not walking people and just being healthy. Like, it's just cool to see him and Lindor to some extent, but it got rough for Carrasco there for a little bit. And I think that as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be dynasty useful definitely this season, probably next season. So if you're worried about wanting to acquire somebody like this, I think that you can get at least another one or two seasons out of him in a dynasty setting. So just a quick note on Carrasco, just because I like him so much and wanted to give him a quick shout. Another one guy that got called up to that broke camp with the club, that was another BP favorite. I know that you and Brett were maybe not pounding the table to the degree of Asaya Suzuki, but you were pretty in on Jeremy Peña early.
Brett was definitely pounding the table really hard for Peña. He got up. Peña is in the 50s in our most recent Dynasty Prospect update. Brett wanted him in the top 50. easily, and he's always been pushing for Pena to be higher.
I was a little unsure about how the dynamic went, so I was taking you as a ranking team.
Usually I have to push back from Brett.
Take some credit for this one.
I got to give the credit.
He's been awesome.
He has been awesome. I've got to give a lot of credit here to Pret, and obviously the BP prospect team, who have been high guys on Pena forever. Pena is flashing more power than I had anticipated, more power than he showed in AAA last year. His max exit velocity is 110 miles an hour. His average exit velocity so far is 93.2 miles an hour. And he has 6 barrels already on 30 batted balls for 20% barrel rate. It's just been wild how much power he's been flashing so far in the early going. You know, it's the type of player, power like boost that we're seeing, that we were questioning how much of the AAA, power binge he went on was real or really a product of the PCL. I mean, he didn't have really shiny exit velocities in AAA. But that said, the power, I think, in a large case is very real, and he has a line drive stroke, 30% line drives already this year. I am still a little leery about his hit tool. I think that, his approach is not great. He swings a ton, 53.2% swing rate. He chases a lot, 37.8%, and this is not like inconsistent with what he did in the minors. I mean, he's an aggressive hitter. He's not a high contact hitter. His bat to ball ability is not special, even though I know the prospect team thinks it's, quite good. But, his whiff rate, 29.3%. His whiff rate in AAA last year was over 30%. So he's not a high contact hitter by any means. I think he could develop because of the line drives that he hits and, the quality of his contact, at least. I think he could develop into like an average to above average hit tool. I mean, if it comes with average to above average power and average to above average speed, that is the type of player that we often overlook in Dynasty and in Fantasy, because there isn't like a plus tool there, but he's a player who some of his parts, along with his elite defense, because he has elite shortstop defense, is going to make him a long-term staying, give him long-term staying power. You're going to keep his balance in the lineup. And I mean, if he hits like 270 with 20 home runs and 10 stolen bases, that is a very valuable player. And I think that he could do something like that even as soon as this year. And I think that's close to what I personally envision as his peak. I know that others are higher, so we should be very excited about what he's doing so far. He's been just exceptional.
Yeah, when you mentioned kind of doing everything pretty well across the board, it just the first name that jumped into my mind was good Jorge Polanco, and I just pulled up his 2021 and forgot that he hit 33 home runs last year, which is it just doesn't make any sense to me. But with Pena, we mentioned the hit tool, and I think that will be the determining factor of how high he can go. I'm with you. I don't know that it's good enough to sustain high batting average. It might get there, but for it to get there, like, there has to be development. Like, it's not just a straight line trajectory, like, okay, he's doing X, Y, and Z, so he's gonna have a good hit tool down the road. Like, there's still gonna have to be some improvements for him to get there. And I think betting on that is doing so believing in the development. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but even still, like a 255, 265 average with the power and with the capability of maybe stealing double digit bases, and like you said, the defense is going to keep him in the lineup, that's still a really good player. And then that's non-elite Jorge Polanco. So that's like, above average Jorge Polanco. So that's still a good player, even if it's not one that jumps out in your mind as, okay, I need to target getting Jeremy Pena early in most drafts.
Yeah, I think right now Pena's perceived value in Dynasty Leagues is probably far outweighs what his likely, upside is. I mean, of course he could you know, prove us wrong, show, you know, gains of the hit. So maybe the power is really, truly has, well, staying power. And maybe he is the guy who can, like, give you over 20 home runs. And that power and the quality of his contact, maybe it can drive a healthy average despite his approach issues. I mean, we'll see. Again, you know, we have had 2 weeks of baseball, and I want to stress that because it's 2 weeks. We need to not overreact to things too much unless it's about Seiya Suzuki, and you're totally okay with overreacting to that and saying that we got that 100%
right. Well, you're right. Yeah. Like, if you're, it's not an overreaction, it's just a reaction because all of those things are correct. Seiya Suzuki is that dude.
But yeah, I think Peña is a player that I'd be, you know, I'd listen to. I'd try and trade for him, but I wouldn't get like too aggressive with it just because, you know, I think that his, again, his upside is not as high as he's making it out to be so far.
It's a little bit what Jazz did last season when he got off to a hot start and was like the belle of the ball. And I love Jazz Chisholm, so I mean, I'm not trying to disparage him, but then he settled back. He came back to earth and is very good as opposed to the next big thing. There's always going to be guys like this early in the season, and you just need to be wary of when to go all in. I don't know that I would on Peña, but I think that he's going to be a good fantasy option and even probably better than average fantasy option moving forward. But I would be nervous to push in my chips on a guy like this. So let's stay in Houston. Do you think Justin Verlander is going to continue his 0.69 ERA for the rest of the season?
No, but I do think that a lot of what he was is back and is here. And
he's healthy.
I mean, there's a reason why the Astros gave him $25 million with an option if he gets over 130 innings pitched this year for another year of $25 million. I mean, there's a reason. He's not necessarily exactly what he was in 2019, but he's very close. You know, his stuff is basically almost all the way the same, almost all the way back. His fastball has the exact same movement profile and velocity as it did in 2019. Exact same. 94.6 miles an hour, 10.7 inches of drop, and 10.1 inches of horizontal break. It's exactly the same, which is remarkable. I think that's just a fascinating little tidbit with Verlander. But, you know, his slider is very much the same as it was. His curveball is the same as it was. It's a touch slower, honestly. And his command's not fully there yet, which is understandable given his time off. But, you know, I think he, while he may not be exactly what he was in 2019, I mean, we're not expecting that. I mean, he has a 21 game winner with a 2.58 ERA and 300 strikeouts in 2019. Even if he can get like remotely close to that, if he could be closer to what he was in 2017, where he had 3.36 ERA, 15 wins and 219 strikeouts. I mean, that's amazing. And at his draft cost, it's a huge win. And I really do think he's very close to that. I mean, I've been pumping him. I've been acquiring him. I have a lot of shares of Verlander, a lot of shares of Seiya Suzuki. Things are going well in a lot of respects. But, yeah, I believe in Verlander. I'd go get him before his cost gets exorbitant because I think, you know, he's a great rental in a way because, I mean, it's like a two-year rental. And, like, those have a lot of value for win-now teams in Dynasty. And you should try to acquire him wherever you can.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, as a mindset to go in when you're trying to trade for some of these guys that are in their late 30s. If you have a set number of years in mind when you're trying to make a trade, I think it's like imminently easier to give up what you would need to give up because a lot, when you look at like, oh, I'm trading for a 39-year-old, it's a lot more, it's a lot less appetizing than saying I'm trading for 2 years of really good production. What happens after that, who knows? But I'm trading for 2 years of really good production. It's not that I'm trading for 2 years of a 39-year-old. And it might just be semantics or ways to trick your brain. But I do think that that is a good point and that it helps when you're making decisions like that on acquiring an older player.
Yeah, you know, age is just a number, right? and, you know, if the performance data supports that there isn't a decline, I mean, ride it out, you know, while you have it. And there's a massive discount because of that number. And so, yeah, I mean, this is the thing in Dynasty Leagues. Do not underrate older players. I mean, it's very easy to do that. Once a player is over 30 years old, they get largely written off by a lot of people in Dynasty Leagues. And, you know, Jake Devereaux, formerly of the Dynasty Guru, was on my old podcast with me. He always was a guy in Dynasty Leagues who exploited that and would try to acquire older assets. And, you know, Nelson Cruz is still doing things. I mean, he's ancient by baseball standards. And, you know, there is decline. And when there is decline and it's real, these players, their value goes away. It goes to drops close to zero. And that's the real risk. But, you know, you just got to – everything's risky in sports. You know, there's all – players get hurt. Players regress. I mean, players do Cody Bellinger things and just fall off the face of the earth out of nowhere in a lot of ways. And, you know, things like this happen, and you can't predict everything. And I think these older assets, there's great value there.
Yeah, it's a dirty little secret of – some of the stuff that we do as fantasy managers. Like, you can be as prepared as possible, but then there's always going to be a certain degree of luck and fortune when it comes to who has the best seasons. So like, sometimes you just can't do anything. You make all the right process decisions and then you just can't make it work. And sometimes you just grab Seiya Suzuki because you know he's going to be a stud, and it does work because obviously it works.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about a couple more pitchers before we move on to some, concerning early struggles for players. You know, Carlos Rodon has had a huge start to the year. His velocity's up to 96.4 miles an hour, up a mile an hour, which was crazy because last year his velocity was up. So he's just have the steady trend of more velocity. And meanwhile, his slider's back and he's healthy, which, you know, big shrug. We had no, that was the big question with Rodon. You know, the fact that the White Sox did not even offer him a qualifying offer was a huge red flag.
Sort of insane.
Then, of course, the Giants, like, offer him a multi-year contract. You know, big multi-year contract, 2 year. I think it's 2 years, $44 million or something like that. And all of a sudden, that maybe he is fully healthy. Maybe there is confidence. Yeah, and now he's been exactly. He picked up exactly where he left off last year. I think we can be safe to say it's time to move him back up for those who had faded him. And another thing that's been interesting about what he's done so far this year with the Giants, new club, so you know this is slightly different process. He's ditched his changeup, which is a terrible pitch, and it was a good decision. You know, his changeup has easily been by far his worst pitch. It's it's just not been. It was bad last year. It had a 425 WOBA against last year. It did miss bats on occasion, but in general it just wasn't a good pitch, and he ditched it, and now he's going with his third pitch. He's going more to his curveball when he has to, which I think is a good decision. His curveball is perfectly fine, an adequate pitch, and you know, the quality of his fastball and his slider collectively I think is going to be enough in modern baseball to, you know, go through 5-6 innings very cleanly. I mean, I think he's going to just destroy hitters because those two pitches are both plus-plus pitches or better. And, you know, I think that's going to be enough. And you can use the curveball on occasion to keep hitters off balance. I really back in on Rodon. I do think there is still risk because he has such a lengthy history of arm issues. And, you know, he threw 132 innings last year, which is more than he'd thrown in a year since 2016. So we'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. I think there is still a lot more risk, and there's a reason why he's not going to be like a top 50 dynasty player because of that risk. But he's a player who's definitely trending up.
Yeah, he's striking out 45% of opposing hitters, which is insane for any starting pitcher. It's really interesting when a guy like JP and I would talk about this with teams that were really good at developing a specific thing. And it really seems like the Giants have it figured out of who to target, who they think that they can maximize. Because they're doing it with Alex Wood Cobb. Too, and Alex Cobb.
The Alexes.
The
Alexises.
That doesn't work. but you look at these guys that have been interesting in flashes elsewhere, with like Kevin Gausman, Anthony DeSclafani. Like, they have these guys that they, you know, pick out a few things. It has me interested to see what happens with Matthew Boyd when he comes back later this season. These guys have been successful in spurts, and the Giants just seem to know how to maximize those spurts. Are there any other teams that stick out to you as like, oh, look out, that this guy just went to this organization as a pitcher, they might know something that we don't, or they might be in for a resurgence? Are there any other teams that stick out as situations that would be super beneficial, like San Francisco with pitching?
I think the Marlins would be the one that would stick out the most. I think they've done a great job developing young pitching lately.
The change-ups, like the organizational change-up.
Yeah, and Jesus Luzardo went over there, and you know, while he's had an up-and-down, I guess, start to the season, he is flashing more velocity, and, you know, he's showing his best self in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think that the Marlins definitely are a team. If you're seeing a young pitcher go over there, you're like, ooh. Uh-huh. Or if they draft a young pitcher, you know, be on the lookout, because they really do a great job of developing pitching. They have so many of those pitchers have excellent changeups. They do a great job of teaching that in the system. And, but yeah, the Giants are definitely like, they got some kind of voodoo magic going on over there with how they're handling pitching. It's crazy.
So it's basically the Giants and then not Angels. Yes. Although they're a little better this year,
the Angels
still
drafted 20 pitchers in the draft last year. They use every single pitcher on pitchers, pick on pitchers. They figure, throw as many darts against the wall, maybe one of them will stick, you know. Some of those guys are actually showing up this year so far.
Let's talk about a few more arms. Do you want to talk about Kyle Wright Brash next?
I want to talk about Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright. This is, you know, a former highly regarded pitching prospect, you know, former fifth overall pick out of Vanderbilt for the Braves, and just hadn't ever really pulled it put together as a major leaguer because he walked everybody. You know, his career walk rate, he had never had a walk rate below 14% in the major leagues until so far this year. Two starts. So, you know, the sample is teeny, but 2.4% walk rate so far, which is crazy, considering that this is a player who regularly would walk like 4 or 5 batters in a game, and he's pounding the zone. His zone rate right now is 53%. First pitch strike rate is 66.7%. He's always had excellent stuff, but guess what? It's a little better now as well. In particular, his changeup has, the shape of which has really kind of transformed. It's getting a lot more depth and a lot more run. It's averaging 18.4 inches of horizontal run, which is freaking crazy. That's 35 inches of drop with eight mile an hour, you know, differential, 87 mile an hour pitch. So it's a hard changeup. That changeup is a potentially really special pitch. If he can maintain, you know, what he's showing so far, it's generated 40% whiff rate, of course, because that movement profile is wild. And if he can maintain getting that pitch in the zone, or at least having a fade outside of the zone, I think he could really, you know, be a huge riser. And I also love that he's moving more away from his fastball, which, you know, while it has good velocity, its movement profile is a big shrug. You know, his fastball and sinker, they're just not bat missing pitches at all, even though they're 94, 95 mile an hour pitches. And he's moving a bit away from them and focusing more on his curveball and changeup, which are his bread and butter pitches. Curveball is a big two plane breaker, and you know, if that's real, if this change is his usage change is this is real, his command gains are real, his changeup movement profile is real, then he is very real, and he's going to be a player who's going to jump high in the next rankings. I think he has top 200 dynasty overall upside very early, but this early stuff is very exciting. So I'm thinking Kyle Wright's a guy you should try and target, even if it feels like you're targeting him high, because I think he has a ton of potential helium here.
Well, every year in the prospect top 10 list, you see there are a ton of guys where the write-up is somewhere along the lines of has pretty good stuff, walks way too many people, might be a reliever because of that. And this is what happens when those guys figure out their command a little bit more. He's not going to walk 2% of hitters, but his last two stints in AAA, 2019 and last year, he's thrown about 250 innings and walked around 8% of opposing hitters. Even if he hovers around that, that would be a massive improvement from what he's shown in the big leagues before. So it's in there. He just hasn't done it yet. And it seems like this sort of start could build the confidence to trust his stuff a little bit more instead of nibbling or trying to chase to get back into counts, like you mentioned with the first pitch strike. I'm with you with Wright. I watched that Mackenzie Gore, Kyle Wright start for Gore's debut. And it was really fun watching Mackenzie Gore in the big leagues finally. But the takeaway of that game was that Kyle Wright was awesome. And I think that, you know, it could be real. And I'm with you. I'm full steam ahead on Kyle Wright. He's been super impressive to me so far this season.
Well, why don't you tell us what you observe about Mackenzie Gore? Because he's definitely on our, you know, list right here of players I want to talk about. And tell us your observations.
So I have run the gamut on Mackenzie Gore. Like, he obviously was a top prospect. He just struggled so much and then got to the point where the Padres were signing 2021 version of Jake Arrieta instead of giving him a look last year. And you're like, what is going on? I don't understand why, you know, they seem to be so down on him. And you just hear about the mechanics. So I wrote a couple different spots that I was just out on him, on Mackenzie Gore, until further notice. Like, I'm not trying to acquire him. I'm not trying to pick him up. I'm just out. And then he was great in spring training. He was great in his first AAA start. I'm still not quite there. Maybe it's just a little trauma of talking about him as the best pitching prospect in baseball and then him not debuting for two seasons when it was conceivable that he would. He's not getting as many whiffs as I would like. And I don't know if he's quite refined that mix against big league hitters. So I'm not all the way back in, but I'm encouraged that he's striking out a quarter of opponents through his first two starts. He's walking a few too many guys, but it's encouraging for him to be where he's at now, even though I don't know if I would have that ace upside tag on him anymore, but we'll see where he goes for the rest of the season, presuming that he stays up.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Mackenzie Gore is his mechanics are so complicated. They've always mm-hmm. been complicated, and he's really struggled with repeating his delivery over the last few years, and it's led to a lot of command issues and a lot of control issues, of course, you know, with the spiked walk rates. And It's still a mess in a lot of ways, and I think that you're getting glimpses of the mess already in the major leagues. He's had a great start. He's had two starts so far. He's been excellent so far, but the fastball gets too often. It's just right down the middle. The fastball is easily his best pitch. It's averaged 95.4 miles an hour in the majors with a solid movement profile, has some carry. That kind of velocity from left side is not common, especially out of a starting pitcher. The big issue with Gore, other than the command, which is still a problem, are the secondaries, which, while they were lauded when he was young, they haven't really taken a step forward at all. If anything, they've taken a step back. The changeup is probably his best secondary, yet he hasn't really gone to it a lot in the majors so far. It has pretty good separation and pretty good movement. His command of it is, meh. I mean, it's not great, and that's probably why he isn't going to it very much, even though it's his best secondary. His slider command is by far his He commands that pitch by far better than any other pitch he throws. Yet it's probably his worst secondary. It's very much like kind of like a flat, tight slider that, comes in hard, but I don't really think it has very much in the way of bat missing qualities. And, it's probably still like an average major league offering. And, the curveball, which is what he was known for as a young prospect, just is kind of just like an average pitch as well. I mean, it has like above average movement as a pure 12 to 6 curveball, but his command of it is so shaky that it definitely plays down. And that's the problem, is those secondaries, those breaking balls in particular, are not great. And while he has a great fastball and he has a promising changeup, there's so much more work to do. But I mean, we have to, if you have any shares of Gore, you have to be happy about his start this year.
If you held on to him this long, you're pumped. You're pumped that he's producing for you now.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say pump the brakes a little bit about the excitement. It's just, if you have him, it actually could be a great time to trade him.
Yeah, so if you look at his Statcast page, like you mentioned, the command, like he throws his fastball 70% of the time, and then you see the heat maps of where everything is going, and it still is not where you want it to be. There are still so many like outliers in the zone. He's not really locating where you would think that he wants to locate with a lot of these pitches. So it's pretty obvious when you look at that stuff what needs to improve. It's just gonna ha be hard to do so on the fly against major league hitters with already complicated mechanics. So,
Well,
yeah.
speaking of command issues, the player I really want to talk about today is Matt Brash. He's a rookie pitching prospect for the Seattle Mariners, a right-hander. He's off to a great start. He's probably going to be a regular on Pitching Ninja because his breaking stuff is crazy. His
Filthy.
slider is one of the wildest. His breaking ball, I mean, however you want to classify it, slider, curveball, is freaking wild. It has two crazy two-plane movement, huge horizontal break. It's going to be a huge bat misser if he can locate it, which he doesn't care about. And he admittedly doesn't care about it. He's gone on the record saying that he doesn't try to hit spots, that they literally just set up down the middle and he throws up as hard as he can and hopes that it's a strike, basically. And that's a super scary thing to hear from any pitcher, period. And the other thing that's weird about Brash, while he throws heat, almost 96 miles an hour on average, his fastball, movement profile is not fantastic. It's not a pitch that I think is going to miss a lot of bats up in the zone. It's not one of those pitches that has huge carry. It's just kind of eh. And his mechanics are just incredibly like all over the place, and they're certainly not going to be very easy to like. They're very jerky and violent, and I just think that there's going to be boatload of walks in the future. There were last year. There have been already this year, 16.7% walk rate. He's a player that if you have, you should trade him, because I don't think his value is going to get higher than what it is right now, because there is so much command problems with his profile. And even though those breakers are great and his changeup flashes some awesome movement too, because it has huge depth and run, he just has no clue where the ball is going. And then if you look at his, I guess his maps, right, his pitch arsenal maps on StatCast, it's like a, you know, a scatter shot. It's totally scatter shot. He just throws the ball everywhere. Like, it's... he's going to be a very frustrating player, I think. And, you know, there are not shades of like Dylan Cease here. He's like a very poor man's Dylan Cease in many regards, because Dylan Cease has a special fastball. But, you know, Brash has very, I guess he is a poor man's Dylan Cease. I think that's a good way of describing him. You know, he doesn't have Dylan Cease's quality of fastball movement profile, but he has the type of breaking balls and changeup that Cease has, I think. He just does it. It's like Cease when Cease had no command. And worse. I don't know. that's my like little loose comp right there. But Brash is a fun player, but he's a scary profile.
It's sort of like the kid who's bigger than all of the other kids and like is playing basketball and will just drive to the hoop, and they're so big that they can just get there and make layups every time. And then once they finally start facing people that are as big and more skilled, like they either have to make an adjustment or they're just not going to be as effective. It seems like so far Brash is not making the adjustment of, you know, figuring out where he's going to throw it. But it'll be interesting to see once guys start just laying off of everything, if he does. But it's fun to look at, but it's also, I would be very nervous as a Mariners fan or as a Matt Brash dynasty manager, because, I mean, sooner or later, the best hitters in the world are going to figure out, maybe I just don't have to swing at any of these.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, probably one of the more fun pitchers in all of baseball, honestly. I think his breaking ball, I can pull it up probably at StatCast, but it probably has the most extreme, it's probably on the very edge of like the map of all the breaking balls in terms of like horizontal and vertical movement. It's crazy. It's probably, I mean, the pure qualities of his slider curveball, they are probably border, they're definitely plus plus. I mean, there's a chance that it might be like an 80 grade pure when you're looking at velocity and movement, but the command of it's so bad that it's never going to play to being an 80 grade pitch. So he's just a fascinating player. He's a guy I would definitely sell right now. I think his value is at its high point, probably right now, just because the command's so scary. We talked about
good performances, and that's more fun. It's always just fun to talk about the successes. But before we get out of here, let's hit on a couple guys that have been struggling so far, and then we can decide if we can list these guys and then decide if we would be trying to buy low, or, you know, maybe a little nervous and let's stay away. And if you have you have some thoughts to add on either, then we can do that as well. The first couple on the list, Gerrit Cole and Walker Buehler, who have both been off to a little bit of a rocky start, at least as far as their skill sets are concerned. Are you worried? Are you sending out feelers to see if you can maybe pick these guys up, or where are you at with these two?
This may sound weird, but I'm actually more worried about Walker Buehler than I am about Gerrit Cole. And it's weird to say that. Walker Buehler had the best fastball in baseball last year, and this year he has the second worst fastball in baseball. That's a big change. And, you know, a lot of it is due in part to, I think, the sticky substance issues are going to be more extreme early in the season when the weather's cold, because I think as a pitcher, at least in my experience, it was always more difficult to get a good firm grip on the ball when it was cold outside. And I think players like Gerrit Cole, Walker Buehler, players who relied on sticky substances, who had substantial either changes in spin rate or performance when the sticky substance ban went into place are going to struggle more at the beginning of the season than once the weather warms up a bit. And, you know, right now, so far, Walker Buehler's four-seam fastball is over 200 RPMs slow, you know, less spin than it was last year. And it's getting rocked. It's getting rocked so far. Its velocity is down a touch, too. And I would be a touch concerned about Walker Buehler. I mean, he hasn't been terrible so far. You know, 4.02 ERA, one in three starts. Like, it doesn't scream, like, be afraid of him. But I would be a little bit concerned. And, you know, meanwhile, Gerrit Cole, I'm less concerned about Gerrit Cole than I am Walker Buehler, which is weird to say because Cole has, I guess, been his performance. You know, Yankees fans are unforgiving, and his performance has disappointed many people so far this year. But, you know, the stuff's intact. You know, I think it's just, you know, early season struggles. Remember, we had a short spring training. The ramp up is awkward for a lot of pitchers, and I would give a little bit more runway for Cole based on what I'm seeing here. And again, you know, another player with one of the best fastballs in baseball, and it's playing as, you know, one of the worst fastballs in baseball. Ninth worst fastball in baseball so far this year, Gerrit Cole. But I have a little bit more confidence that Cole is going to rebound. So actually, you know, if it might not be a bad idea to inquire about Cole, especially given the kind of noise I'm seeing on Twitter saying that he's not like a, not even a top 10 starting pitcher anymore. And
that's ridiculous.
Like, it's just, it's overreaction season. It's crazy.
he has a 23% home run fly ball rate, and that would be his highest, like since the shortened season in 2020 by 5 percentage points. So that number will come back to earth. And a lot of his struggles or a lot of his ERA can be traced to, you know, inopportune early season home runs. So yeah, I think that between Walker Buehler and maybe even it's time to be more concerned about Julio Urias, based on his velocity, his swinging strikes, strikeouts. Yeah, it's interesting to see some guys that maybe benefited from the sticky stuff, like struggling so much. I hadn't even thought about that, about cold weather, about getting off to slow starts, which I guess portends to maybe them being rebound candidates. But where are you on Urias?
So a lot of the guys who have less velocity, like Urias, Bieber, Ray, among them, I'm probably actually less concerned about Urias and Ray than I am about Bieber, because Bieber had low velocity last year when he returned, and he's recovering from it. He's still like, you know, that injury is still back in the back of my mind.
Right.
So, like, it makes you wonder if there's something else wrong with him. Urias does have, like, a history not too recent, you know, not too, I mean, it was pretty recent, of shoulder issues. So, you know, I'm a little concerned. I'm not nearly as concerned with Urias and Ray as I am with Bieber or with, like, Buehler even, because, you know, it's very early. Remember, it's cold weather. It's early. There hasn't been a really big ramp up for spring training. A lot of these pitchers are still trying to build, you know, innings and pitch counts. And so I'm not too concerned. Now, if this velocity trend is still there in May, then yeah, I'm going to be a little bit concerned about Urias, but or a little more concerned. I am a little bit concerned, but I don't think it's something that I wouldn't pay too close of attention. Less velocity, I'd be more interested in more velocity, right? Because that's, you know, more velocity in cold weather is just something that's like eye popping. but you know, I'm not as concerned. I'm actually, one player that I am concerned about a little bit, a pitcher, is Trevor Rogers. I think the remarkable thing about Trevor Rogers this year is he has gotten zero whiffs on his changeup. His changeup, which is his best pitch by far, it's, you know, a pitch that has, you know, I think it's arguably has played as a plus-plus pitch in the past. And all of a sudden, it's just not, hitters aren't offering. They're not whiffing. They're, you know, in general, the pitch is fairly stable, but it just makes you wonder. You know, one thing he did this year was he changed his slider shape. His slider has a lot more horizontal movement, And, you know, I'm wondering how, what kind of impact that may have on his changeup. And his slider has gotten lit up this year as well. So, I don't know. I think he's a player I'm a little concerned about. You know, there's a lot more separation now between his slider and changeup, and I think that could be a problem. You know, that hitters may have had more issues when they were more close together in velocity. But he's a player I'm a tad concerned about. His velocity was also down in the spring substantially. His velocity's back so far this year, so I don't know. He's a player I'm definitely monitoring moving forward. A lot of these players, you just see what's happening because there's some concerning trends. But again, it's the sample's so small that we should not overreact too hard to a lot of it.
Last one before we get out of here. Who are you more concerned about when it comes to blue chip premium rookies? Bobby Witt Jr. or Julio Rodriguez?
Witt. In general, though, I'm not concerned about either, but I am more concerned about Witt's ability to produce this year than I am with Julio Rodriguez. Witt has been chasing a boatload, and you know that was a concern. You know that he would chase a bit more than you would feel comfortable with, but his chase rate's over 40% so far. He's an aggressive hitter, and it's not like he's a high contact hitter. I mean, he makes enough contact. He's flashed his power a little bit, but I am concerned that maybe that his approach is going to get, you know, taken advantage of by pitchers. I'm not concerned with Julio Rodriguez. You know, he hasn't really, he's not done much, obviously, but the big thing with Julio Rodriguez, which is, you know, interesting, is the speed gains that he showed last year, and that, you know, everyone was saying that that all of a sudden he's become a plus runner. It's very real. I mean, his sprint speed is 99th percentile. You know, again, sprint speed is not the best indicator, but, you know, his contact's actually been quite good, 59.1% hard hit rate, 111.7% max exit velocity. You know, though the power is legit, he's been hitting everything on the ground or on a line, and he just isn't lifting the ball. And I think that will change. He'll get the ball in the air, and I think he'll take off. But the fact that I'm actually very encouraged that the speed gains are staying. He's stolen four bases already. I mean, he could legitimately, I mean, it's crazy to even think about. I think he legitimately has that, like, sneaky, Fernando Tatis, Ronald Acuna Jr. upside. I think he has it, which, you know, I wasn't not 100% sold on that the speed would be anything more than, like, you know, 15 to 20 stolen bases, which even that was more than I had thought he'd become. And I'm thinking that there might be something that could approach 30 stolen bases in him. And if that comes with a bat that gets 30 home runs, I mean, he may be your next 30-30 player. And,
yeah, I was going to say, that's fun. Like top three, top five overall kind of stuff you're looking at there. I'm a little, like, I'm like you. I think that Witt, it was always going to be a little bit slower going for a guy like him. He's in the top 10 of all of baseball for chase rate. So I think that that's something that he'll have to clean up a little bit. Julio is sort of the opposite. Like, there's been a lot of different talk on Twitter or articles about how he's just kind of been getting hosed on third strike calls that have been not strikes. So I think that that's something that'll kind of get back to normal as well. I don't think that you would be able to acquire Julio in any dynasty type format, but if it's possible, like, if you should be floating to see, because I think that there could be just be like one of those monster second halves where you're like, oh yeah, there he is. Like, it's been bubbling, even though the results have not been there on the traditional stat line. He could be he could be due for just like a monster emergence in the second half. So I'd be taking the temperature, even though it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to acquire Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, I agree. I guess before this has been a longer pod. I mean, there's a lot of ground to cover, and we took a week off. But one thing I want to note before we get going is how Joe Maddon is handling things with the Angels. I would be very concerned if you have shares of Jared Walsh, Joe Adell, Brandon Walsh. Like, you know, Joe Maddon's hitting players like
Brandon Marsh. Are you thinking of the 90210?
Yeah. he's doing wild things with that lineup. You know, he's hitting players like Jack Mayfield cleanup. He's benching Jared Walsh against lefties in favor of Matt Duffy. And Joe Adell is, you know, likely going to be hitting the bench now that Mike Trout's back and Taylor Ward's back. And so it's just like, and of course, you know, he walked Corey Seager with the bases loaded, which I guess caught most of the news lately. It's just, he's doing wacky things with that team. It's not very fantasy friendly unless you have the stable players like, well, stable players like, you know, Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, Shohei Ohtani. Everyone else, their playing time is very much in flux. You know, so that's just a scary thing to think about. You know, Jared Walsh has got to fall at this point. You know, he's a player who is looking like a strong side platoon bat, period. Like, that's legitimately what he is. And he was terrible against lefties last year. So it's not without, you know, it's not unwarranted necessarily. So it's something that you need to be aware of. And it's the Joe Adell thing is really bothers me. It hurts. He's never going to get it. He's never going to get the real opportunity that we really want to have. And, you know, he flashes. He flashes the power. He flashes the speed. He still whiffs all the time. All the time. Over 40% whiff rate. So
look, sometimes you just have to see what, you know, youngsters like Taylor Ward and 31-year-old Jack Mayfield and Tyler Wade, you got to see what they have. The exactly. Jury's still out on what they could bring to you. So I'm sorry, Joe Adell. Like, your time will come in 8 years when you know, you're on your next team and Joe Maddon is somehow the manager there.
Oh man. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer. The Angels are they're kind of getting some pitching, which is cool, and they have Shohei Ohtani, which is very cool, and they're getting Mike Trout back, which is, you know, also great, but they just find a way. And I think that at a certain point you just have to look at, okay, is this dude making the lineup card really helping us? Like, is all of the avant-garde things that he was doing now just traditional, and he's trying to find new ways to be weird with managing? So I don't know what to make of it, but it's concerning when it comes to some of those guys for fantasy purposes. Any other quick hitters before we get out of here?
Oh man, quick. All right, I'll do some really quick ones. All right, I'll just touch on some players I saw live looks of the other week. It was a brief 3-game series between Charleston, which is the low A affiliate of the Rays, and Myrtle Beach, which is the low A affiliate of the Cubs. The Cubs prospects really disappointed me in live looks. Reginald Preciado, he's a shortstop prospect for the Cubs. He's young. He's raw. He's, I guess, theoretically projectable because he's a 6'4 rail thin frame, but he has narrow shoulders. I do not think he's a frame that is the type of frame that's going to develop real impact power like I think a lot of people hope. I don't think he's going to become like a plus power hitter. He's a switch hitter. His right hand swing is pales in comparison to his left hand swing. Like, far less bat speed, far less pop, very little pop at all actually from the right side. Left hand swing works pretty well, but you know, he has huge issues with identifying breaking stuff. His pitch recognition issues are severe. I mean, he has a 57% strikeout rate so far in low A, 26% swinging strike rate. He's falling hard for me. I was pushing to fall further for me before, but he's one of Brett's guys who wants to push him up. I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. He did not look good. Very limited look, of course, but did not look good when I saw him. And James Triantos, third base prospect, not second base anymore. He's playing third base for Myrtle Beach for the Cubs. He had a huge debut last year, but from the looks I saw, I do not see a lot of pop in that bat. I don't think it's going to play in games very well either. And it's a short, compact swing. He has a very stocky, fully filled out build. I mean, he's a bit jacked, honestly. He has like huge trunk legs. And despite all that, his swing and his approach, he's just not going to get to a ton of power in games, I don't think. And he hasn't so far. He's already been moved down to eighth in the order. He's the guy who's also falling for me. Carson Williams and Willie Vasquez for Charleston are players that I am very excited about. Carson Williams is one of Brett Sayer may be the biggest fan of Carson Williams ever. I mean, he's been wanting Carson Williams pushed up all season, and he may finally get his wish. I am very much in on Carson Williams. He looked great in the looks I've seen of him. His batting practice was fantastic. The power has definitely started to emerge. I think that there is plus potential given his frame and where he's at right now and his swing path. I think he could develop plus power. He has surprising speed. I think there's a lot more speed there than you'll see like other sites give him. I think I don't have the actual data on it. I didn't get any times for him, but visually he looks like a plus runner to me. And he's a pretty good hitter. He has a nice swing. He's doing well. I think the bat to ball ability is definitely a work in progress, but fun prospect player who I think you should be having obviously, Mark, if you're in any leagues with Brett Sayer, you will not get any Carson Williams shares, unfortunately, but you should definitely try and get him in all other leagues. And finally, Willie Vasquez. I'll just touch on him real fast. He's listed as 6 foot, but he is most certainly not 6 foot. He's like 6'3 or 6'4. He's huge, and he's got broad shoulders and a high waist and, narrow. He's just, man, he's like exactly what you envision a prospect, a huge power speed prospect to be. And the power, he put on one of the best power displays I've ever seen in minor league batting practice. Definitely the best I've seen in Charleston, and that includes Owen Casey. So, it's huge, huge raw power already. He's just not getting to it in games. His swing and his, it's just weird. He has a weird, setup, and he has, I think, some issues with tracking breaking stuff. And, he did make a lot of contact last year at the complex level, but it's really fallen off a bit in low A so far. So I'm very much concerned about his hit tool, but the power is very tantalizing. And I think there is some speed there too. It's not like huge, like loud speed. He's definitely not does not have Carson Williams speed, but I think there's enough speed to contribute on the bases there. And if the hit tool comes along with him, he could really pop. Definitely a player to have on your radar in all leagues, but again, not a great start for Willie Vasquez, and the hit tool concerns are real.
Okay, so now I wanted to take a brief 20 to 30 minutes to talk about my thoughts on Aaron Boone intentionally walking Miguel Cabrera on 29.99 hits. Oh, I think we might be out of time for this week. So I'll save the rant for next week. We're going to hit on a lot more prospects next week because there are some fun performances. Grayson Rodriguez is awesome, as many of you may know and won't be surprised about. But we're going to talk about a bunch of prospects next week, and we will. Otherwise, check us out on the site, read Jesse's article that dropped today, read all of our articles that dropped this week. There's going to be a lot more next week. And it's fun to talk about real baseball stats. So thanks for listening. We will catch you next week, and that's it.